What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is legendary cartoonist Bob Mankoff, editor of the new book, Have I Got a Cartoon for You?, the Moment Magazine book of Jewish cartoons. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Our shinshinim are young representatives of Israel, Shai Friedwald and Danielle Levy. And introducing our new shlichach, our mevina in Israel, Inbal Shtivi. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Well, the Israeli national election results are in, and just as we predicted here on Too Jewish, they were pretty darn similar to the results of the election held there this past spring. In other words, neither the right-wing Bibi Netanyahu coalition based in Likud and its allies, nor the center-left coalition led by Benny Gantz and his Kahol Lavan Blue-White party will be able to put together a majority and form a government. That's exactly what happened in April, and this time, if anything, the major parties, particularly Likud, slightly lost ground, making it even harder to create an effective ruling majority of the 120-seat Knesset. Israel's a parliamentary democracy, which means that the leader of the party with the most seats is usually charged with forming the next government. He or she then must assemble a coalition that has at least 61 members of Knesset, 61 votes, a majority of the 120-member body, and then he or she becomes prime minister. If at any time a piece of legislation is brought to a vote in the Knesset and does not pass, the body can then call for a vote of confidence, and if less than 61 members vote for the party in power, the government falls, and new elections must be scheduled. That's also the way they do things in, say, Great Britain or Australia, lots of places. Now, Bibi Netanyahu has managed to remain Prime Minister of Israel since 2009 for over 10 years, always managing to assemble a coalition, some of them quite improbable, that gave him a majority of the Knesset in support of his policies, more or less. Mind you, this decade-long run is actually his second go-round. He was previously prime minister from 1996 to 1999. This time, Bibi has managed to stay in office longer than any previous Israeli prime minister, surpassing even the founder of the nation, David Ben-Gurion. And over the course of that time, Netanyahu has put together coalitions with a variety of partners to manage to stay in office. At one point in the distant past, the left-of-center Labour Party was in his coalition. At another, he formed a government with a centrist secularist party. Often, he has had religious parties in his coalition, as he apparently does now. If politics is the art of the possible, Netanyahu has been the artist of the possible coalition. Of course, this time, as in April, he is under indictment in three separate corruption cases, which has certainly damaged his popularity and his credibility. There are certainly Knesset members who want nothing to do with Netanyahu, and the belief is that if he does not retain the prime ministership, he could very well end up in jail for corruption. Well, in those April elections this year, 2019, his own political party, Likud, won 35 seats in the Knesset, as did the major opposition party, Blue-White, Kahol Lavan, of Benny Gantz. Back then, Netanyahu managed to cobble together a coalition of exactly 60 members of Knesset. Likud's 35 seats, plus two religious parties, plus the secularist Russian party of Avigdor Lieberman. That 60-vote group, however, left him one shy of an actual voting majority. And so, instead of giving the opposition a chance to form its government, he finagled things so that new elections were called. Well, the net change after 5 months of campaigning and political maneuvering was pretty similar to what happened back in the spring. This time around, Likud got a few fewer votes, but so did Kahol Levon, only not as many fewer. Likud apparently ends up with 31 seats, Kahol Levon with 33 seats in the Knesset. That makes building a coalition even more difficult, especially because the Arab parties ended up with about 13 seats. And no one really wants to be in a coalition with parties that are at best non-Zionist and at worst anti-Zionist. The best estimates are that Netanyahu has a close-knit right-wing and religious party coalition of about 56 seats. That means he would need to pull in another five Knesset members somehow, either from Avigdor Lieberman's secular Russian Zionist party, Yisrael Beitenu, or from defections from the center-left coalition. Benny Gantz and Kahol Levon have a coalition of about 45 seats, even though they have the slightly larger party. And they will need some Arab parties and some combination of the secularist Russian party, Yisrael Beitenu, or perhaps the less extreme Sephardi religious party, Shas, to join them. None of these options appear very likely to be arranged in the 4 weeks that the President of Israel, Reuven Rivlin, must give the next potential prime minister to form a government, or in the extra 2 weeks he or she, in this case he, can ask for. The complex negotiations that lead to the formation of a government are so delicate and demanding that Netanyahu actually canceled an appearance before the UN General Assembly to stay in Israel and do the behind-the-scenes negotiation that goes into creating these complicated coalition governments in Israel. There is an option that sometimes works in these circumstances, a national unity government in which the two largest parties just get together and form a government that is not beholden to the smaller parties and their proposed policies. The leaders of Kahol Levon might be willing to share power with Likud, but they say they have no desire to serve in any government that Netanyahu leads, even if there is supposed to be a rotating prime ministership. Yisrael Beitenu, the Russian secular Zionist party of Avigdor Lieberman, says it won't serve in any government with Arab parties, not in this world or the next, I think was the quote, or in any government with religious parties, definitely not in the next world, which pretty much rules out anybody ending up with a necessary majority of 61 Knesset members. And on it goes. I'm really not sure how it's going to end. My guess is that however it does, it will be messy, and some politicians will do things they swore they would never do with people they swore they would never do them. All of which means that we are much better off on this penultimate Sunday of the Jewish calendar year 5779, focusing instead on the upcoming Jewish High Holy Days. A week from tonight begins Rosh Hashanah, the Festival of the Shofar, of the Sefer HaChaim, the Book of Life, of apples and honey, the beginning of the 10 days of repentance. To play us in on the theme of Rosh Hashanah, here's Areshet Tzvatenu. Open our lips to praise you, God, from the shofar service for Rosh Hashanah.
Mommy!
That was my old friend Bob Remstein on piano with cantor Mark Childs on the Santa Barbara Choir singing Areshet Svatenu for Rosh Hashanah, which begins a week from tonight, 6:30 p.m. at my own synagogue, Congregation Beit Simcha. Call for reservations. Our guest this morning, Bob Mankoff, has been the principal cartoonist at New Yorker magazine, the cartoon editor for Moment magazine, and the cartoon and humor editor of Esquire magazine. He has a new project now, a website for cartoons, and a new book out, Have I Got a Cartoon for You?, the Moment magazine book of Jewish cartoons. Meet Bob Mankoff. Find out what makes a Jewish cartoonist when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish. Our guest this morning, Bob Mankoff, has a new book out, Have I Got a Cartoon for You? He is the cartoon editor of Esquire magazine for many years. He was the cartoon editor at a small publication you might have heard of, The New Yorker, and has worked as well at Moment magazine, where he's the cartoon editor. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Yeah, I'm delighted to be here. Actually, I'm not the cartoon editor of Esquire anymore. Oh. Once again, my mantra now is fire me, but you can't retire me. And yeah. So actually now I'm the cartoon editor of Graydon Carter's new publication, online publication, which has wonderful cartoons. No Jewish cartoons yet, but we'll get there, called Airmail. So you got to subscribe to it. So Graydon Carter was the former editor of Vanity Fair. And old white guys, he had to find other work now.
You know, yes, old white guys especially.
Old white guys. We're just hanging on, but hard to completely get rid of.
It's very hard. So I have to ask you this question: a cartoonist, what kind of a job was that for a nice Jewish boy who was going to be an experimental psychologist?
Perfect kind of a job for a nice Jewish boy who didn't want to go to law school, couldn't get into medical school. Never studied, but was funny. And so I played the card I had, which was humor. But the question always from my father was, can you make a living at that? And it's funny, I did a cartoon during the banking crisis of 2008 where I flipped it, where I had an arty guy saying to a banker, can you make a living at this? So I did make a living out of it.
You know, a lot of cartoon humor is reversal humor. It's taking something that you expect and changing it into something dramatic. Maybe that's all humor. Are cartoons particularly oriented that way, do you think?
Well, I think all humor, I mean, humor is different than laughter. Everybody laughs at everything and not much. If you listen to conversation, people are laughing 10 or 20 times an hour at nothing. But because laughter or conversation itself is a kind of tension, humor, laughter relieves the tension, but humor is a little bit different. Humor doesn't, in New Yorker humor or the humor I do now or the humor in this book, there's an idea behind it. And that idea often has some sort of surprise. You can't completely anticipate it, but humor is sort of the surprise we expect in a cartoon, right? Because we know if it's just going to be an ordinary sentence, like in my perhaps most famous cartoon, which is a guy on the telephone looking at his address book saying, no, Thursday's out. How about never? Is never good for you?
It's just the greatest.
So there you not only have a surprise, you have a contradiction, a conflict. And that sort of, I think, is the essence of Jewish humor. So there you have the words are polite, right? Or the syntax or the structure of the sentence. No, Thursday's out. How about never? Is never good for you? As though never would be good for anybody. Whereas normally you would say, can we do next Wednesday? Is that good for you?
We will talk much more. I feel like we're just beginning to, draft the surface of this conversation with Bob Mankoff. His new book is called Have I Got a Cartoon for You? The Moment Magazine Book of Jewish Cartoons. When we come back in a moment, here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills and especially Northwest Tucson, is celebrating its first services, classes, events, and High Holy Days this fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has already created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha is located at 7315 North Oracle Road, north of Ina on the west side of Oracle. Services, classes, and events are open to all. Join us this Friday night at 7315 North Oracle Road for Shabbat evening services at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning Torah study with bagels and lox is at 9 o'clock, followed by Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m., all with me leading them. Join us for Shabbat 7315 North Oracle Road, the west side of Oracle, north of Ina. For our inaugural High Holy Day services, everyone is welcome and there is no charge to come to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but you must pre-register. Call 520-276-5675, that's 520-276-5675, to sign up for the High Holy Days, our inaugural High Holy Days, our first ones at Beit Simcha. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, bar and bat mitzvah preparation, confirmation, and high school programs, our rich array of adult education academy courses, and, of course, the High Holy Days, go to www.beitsimchatucson.org, that's B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675, 276-5675. Beit Simcha Tucson.org. Join me in the newest Jewish community in southern Arizona at its exciting beginning and its first High Holy Days. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or a kvel, please email us at tojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at tojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Question came up recently when we were talking, unconnected with the Two Jewish Radio Show, about whether all religious institutions are corporate or businesses in some sense. And the question came up really because of someone who knows the Catholic Church, and there's a Pope, and there's a hierarchy, and it's very structured, and it's a big international entity that's been around for a very long time. And I remember we were discussing the fact that Judaism doesn't have anything like that. But let's look at the larger question. Are religions kind of analogous to large corporations?
Well, I think to a great extent that depends on the religion. And there are historical reasons that we touched on in our lengthy response to this question the other night. The person who asked the question cited sort of two examples. One was the Roman Catholic Church. The other was LDS. And
the Mormon Church, right?
Right.
Mormon Temple.
Right.
Well,
and so both those religions have clearly like a capital and a structured hierarchy and structured ways of fundraising, which have changed over time. The Roman Catholic Church has obviously a much longer history than the Church of Latter-day Saints.
1,700 years longer or 1,600 or something, depends how you look at it.
But certainly much longer.
Much longer.
And its capital clearly is in the old world. It's the Vatican. And Latter-day Saints has a capital very much in the New World in Utah. But those were the two examples that the questioner cited. And he tended to be dismissive of all organized religion as, oh, it's just a big business. It's all a money game. I mean, the answer is, if you want to be very cynical in looking at those two religions, you could come to that conclusion that over the centuries, the Roman Catholic Church has invented ways of extracting money, even from its poorest adherents, like peasants in medieval Europe who had absolutely no money would still donate whatever they could scrape together, even if it was two pennies, to build those giant cathedrals like Notre Dame and Chartres. And I mean, all those magnificent buildings,
Cologne, all of them
were built by donations.
Right.
And not only are the houses of worship so magnificent and really built on the backs of poor laborers with the sweat of their brows, but also the residences of church officials, and not only popes and cardinals, even bishops had palaces. If you go in southern Germany, which is the most Catholic part of Germany, Bavaria, you see these bishops' palaces that are magnificent. They rival those of the emperors of France or Austro-Hungary or whatever. And
they weren't even cardinals. You know, there was a whole other level above them before you got to the papacy.
Lots of levels.
Right.
And so the question is, why do some religions have that in such abundance and others have nothing like it? I mean, Islam has nothing like that. Judaism has nothing like that. Buddhism has even less like that.
Right.
Hinduism has nothing like that. So
even places that have magnificent temples don't have that kind of structured hierarchy of highly, I don't know, affluent is probably the right term, or people that have access to large amounts of funds.
Well, or just opulent residences for religious officials.
Right.
They're just missing in certain religions and very obviously present in others. So I guess we'll talk next week about why that's the case and how these differences developed historically.
Thanks, Tom. It's a very interesting and complicated subject. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, Anu Shlicha for Israel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center in Baal Shtivi, who has joined our community and is joining Two Jewish. Good morning. Boker Tov. Welcome.
Good morning. Boker Tov. Happy to be here.
Tell us about yourself. Where are you from in Israel? Why did you decide to do this? You know, everything.
Wow. Okay. So I lived in Tel Aviv until 1 month and a half, something like that. Central Tel Aviv with every... Yeah.
So really the heart of Israel.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. The real, like the heart, the heartbeat of
what street?
I know, what street? It's actually quite an older neighborhood. It's called Montefiore. It's just in the entrance to Tel Aviv. Whoever was there knows Azrieli Center and Sarona. So it's kind of near these areas.
Yeah, it's a famous part of Tel Aviv, actually.
It's, yeah. It's the entrance.
It's the gateway to Tel Aviv.
The gateway to Tel Aviv.
Right.
Yeah, and we came here 1 month and a half ago, I guess, to Tucson, to a very different environment.
Very different.
Very different. To the desert, different weather, different vegetation, different everything.
Right.
And yeah.
So you're married, you have two kids.
Yeah.
Tell us about your family a little bit.
I have two kids and a husband. My kids
in that
are,
order, I might add.
Yeah, definitely. You have to, yeah.
You have to have your priorities.
You have to have your priorities, that's for sure. So, yeah, sure. So my two kids are, one of them is 11-year-old and the other one is 3. And they moved here and they take up the challenge of being here and they are heroes. And I have my husband, Iran, who is now just starting to work on his permits and all of these technicalities and bureaucracies. Yeah, and we're all here.
So why? So this is a very, we would call it the $100,000 question. Nowadays, it must be a $10 million question because of inflation. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to come? Why did you decide to do this?
The reason I chose to do a shlichut and to go into this enormous adventure and to get my family on board on this one.
Drag them halfway around the world.
Yeah, drag them halfway around the world. It's just the opportunity to influence, to create change, to be part of something that is bigger, that is older than just ourselves. Let it be the relations between Jewish communities around from Israel and the United States. It's related also to my own curiosity about the way Judaism is practiced all around the world. It's not so similar to what we have at home.
Not exactly like Tel Aviv.
No, not exactly like Tel Aviv or other places in Israel. So it's both the curiosity and the interest to do that and to be part of that effort. It is so important for me to create these connections and to be able to be part of this.
Well, it's a great answer, and we look forward to being part of that exploration for you.
It's a journey.
Welcome to Two Jewish. Welcome to the journey, and Bob.
Thank you.
Lehitrov.
Bye.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Two Jewish as a public service. Survivors of a plane crash, Shlomo and Moshe, are stranded on a desert island in the middle of the ocean. Shlomo tries hard to build a fire, but Moshe just sits on a rock, does nothing, stares out to sea. "Why don't you come here and help me build this fire? They'll never find us." But Moshe replies with equanimity, "Don't worry. I pledged $10,000 to the Federation last year, and I haven't paid it yet. Shlomo, believe me, they'll find us." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. We welcome our young representatives of Israel, Shai Friedwald and Danielle Levy, who are representing the Weintraub Israel Center now and will be with us over this year. We just met them a few weeks ago. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
So the Chagim are coming up, the Jewish high holidays, Yomim Noraim. Explain a little bit about what it means to be a secular Israeli, what's called Chiloni, because I'm not sure that all of our two Jewish listeners understand that distinction.
So for us, for me, living in Israel as a secular is like, I feel the atmosphere of, like for example, for Rosh Hashanah, so everybody wears white shirts and
there's a family dinner.
A family dinner, of course, and a big meal. And you feel the atmosphere of like the spiritual thing of Rosh Hashanah, like
beginning of a new year.
Yeah, beginning of the
fresh,
new year,
right.
Starting from scratch. And you feel that even though
you're
religious,
secular,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Not religious.
And here, I think it's different because, of course, living in a foreign country and they don't celebrate Rosh Hashanah or other holidays. So you need something that will connect you, as example of the synagogues or something to.
So that's Shai, tell me, do you go to hear the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, just a simple kind of thing like that?
I go to synagogue in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Not myself blowing the shofar, but yeah, I go to synagogue.
Okay, so Daniel, you're also chilonit, right? We would say, right? Which means secular, quote unquote. But tell us a little bit, like, what does Rosh Hashanah mean to you?
So, again, I come from a moshav, and everything is really unofficial there. So some of the people in my moshav...
Everything is unofficial. You treat each other unofficially,
most of the thing,
too.
No.
Right? Very informal.
But most of the things are not official. Like, our synagogue is improvised, and we don't have, like, a permanent synagogue to go for tefillah and to hear the shofar. So it really depends on, I guess, what the moshav decides to do. We do have a family dinner, but it's not that... Because, like, my grandparents live 5 minutes from me, so we meet every Friday for Shabbat dinner. So
you always have Shabbat dinner. Oh, by the way, here's a secular family, but you have Shabbat dinner together
exactly.
Every Friday with your grandparents.
Yes. So it's for us pretty much the same. It's all just, like, about getting together with the family and spending all of our time together, and it's more of that than, like, specifically on like a certain holiday, I guess. It's like more the togetherness.
You know, it's interesting because I think for a lot of American Jews, the idea of being Jewish, they might say, oh, I'm just Jewish. But if you want to have a Jewish experience and you don't live in, I don't know, Manhattan or maybe the west side of LA, it's much more difficult.
It takes effort. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, okay, well, everybody's Jewish, Kulanu Yehudim, right? So it's a very different experience. And we'll talk more about this because I think it'll be interesting to hear your perceptions of what Jewish identity means after you've spent more time, even though both of you have lived elsewhere, over the course of this year. Thanks so much, and an early L'Shana Tova.
L'Shana Tova.
And now a word of Torah. This week we celebrate the final Shabbat of the year. That means our Torah portion is one of the great sections of the year, Nitzavim. You stand here today, all of you, oldest to the youngest, wealthiest to the poorest, most famous to the humblest, the leaders of your community and the strangers visiting with you. You are all part of the covenant, the Brit, with the Lord your God, you and every other generation to come who will descend from you. You are all engaged in this great covenant that affirms that you will be God's people and God will be your Lord. This universal covenant establishes that we are part of a profound and eternal tradition, a connection to our ancestors that will be carried forward to our descendants. Each of us, all of us, are part of this remarkable compact. It is an extraordinarily democratic and egalitarian agreement with God, a brit shared with everyone, regardless of gender or age. Children and women stand with men, not always the case at the time of the Torah or even today. So what is the content of this commandment, the mitzvah that we are now to observe? At the climax of our Torah portion, we are told, Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher nachim etzavcha hayom lo nifleit hi mimcha. Look, this commandment I command you today is not too awesome for you. It's not beyond your reach. It's not in the heavens that you should say, who among us can go up and take it for us and teach it to us that we may do it? It's not across the sea that you should say, who among us can cross over the sea and bring it back to us so that we may do it? No, it's very close to you, already in your mouth and in your heart to do it. Perhaps the mitzvah, the commandment Nitzavim speaks about, is no more than becoming aware of the presence of Torah in our midst, or, more precisely, of the presence of God here and now. In this season, we prepare for tshuva, our repentance, but if God is here right now, then tshuva is just a way of becoming aware that the Torah is already built into our minds, and God is already in our hearts. Tshuva, return, simply means God saying, come back to me. Again, become aware of me always being in your life. A great thing to think about and remember as we approach Rosh Hashanah and the season of tshuva, of return and repentance. Our guest this morning returns in a moment. Bob Mankoff is one of the prominent cartoonists in the whole world, past cartoonist at The New Yorker, Esquire magazine, and Moment magazine, and the editor of the Moment magazine book of Jewish cartoons. Hear about the creation of some of his most famous cartoons when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
American Hebrew Academy, the Jewish pluralistic boarding school, the only Jewish one in America, located in Greensboro, North Carolina, closed abruptly in June due to financial issues. But it will reopen this coming year and welcome non-Jewish students as part of a reorganization plan. By expanding our admissions to a broader population of students, we are confident the academy will thrive, said Trustee Glenn Drew. The private school, first and only pluralist Jewish boarding high school, it aspired to be the Jewish version of Chote. It expects to announce a new name, website, and student recruitment campaign in the coming weeks. Won't happen for 2019-20, but for the 2020-2021 school year, the American Hebrew Academy, or whatever they call it, plans to resume classes for 9th, 10th, and 11th grades. No decision has yet been made on 12th. The school has plans to continue to include Jewish studies, Jewish philosophy, and Hebrew in its curriculum. The boarding school hopes to attract international students. Its head of school, Abe Tawil, is expected to return along with other key administrators and faculty. The school opened back in 2001 to great fanfare on a 100-acre campus far from any Jewish population center. It had a total enrollment last year of just 134 students. The academy, which costs $42,000 a school year for tuition and boarding, lost money every year nonetheless. It lost $13 million in 2016-17 and just under $10 million the year before. Chico Sabah, commercial aviation reinsurance mogul who died in 2006 and whose vision and money was behind it, donated more than $100 million to the school and paid the tuition of its initial 77 students all the way through. In other news, Cokie Roberts, a pioneering journalist who with her husband wrote an interfaith Haggadah and published a book about their interfaith marriage, died last week. Cokie Roberts was one of the few female voices on the air when she started in the 70s. She won many prestigious awards for her work, including an Emmy. She was inducted into the Broadcasting and Cable Hall of Fame in 2008. Cokie Roberts was married to Stephen Roberts, a Jewish journalist and journalism professor at George Washington University since 1966. Over the course of their careers, the couple collaborated on many occasions, including writing a nationally syndicated news column for USA Weekend for several years. They co-wrote the book From This Day Forward, first published in 2000, candidly discussing the personal story of their interfaith marriage, while talking about the wider topic of the state of marriage in America. In 2011, they published Our Haggadah, Uniting Traditions for Interfaith Families, a guide for mixed-faith families in which they describe their approach to celebrating Pesach with family and friends of all faiths. Steve Roberts said of his wife, "There's a joke that Cokie is the best Jew in the family, and there's a lot of truth in that. May she rest in peace." And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Bob Mankoff, one of the the top cartoonists in America. Do they have a draft for top cartoonists?
I don't know. I was sixth, and now I've dropped to eighth. I'm very disappointed.
Yeah,
I mean, in America, in every other place, you have to have now a complete ordering. So along those lines, people say, "What's the best cartoon you ever published?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, because really, if I have to say the best, then I'd also have to be able to say the second, the fourth, and the 96th. Like they could all be ordered."
It's funny. Like everything has to have a number. It's true. I think there's a cartoon in that somewhere.
Well, it's like there is. Like, well, I use it. I've been married three times. My third wife is my last and best of all three.
and hopefully the last,
The joke I make to her is, "You're in the top three."
Win, place, or show. Somewhere there, you're in the money, honey.
You're in the top three.
Cartoons are a combination of clever thought and art. Tell me a little bit about your art background.
I went to high school of music and art from 1958 to 1962. It was called the High School of Music and Art then, and now they sort of a catchier name. Now it's called LaGuardia High School.
Uh-huh. Lost something in the translation. It sounds like an airport now. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it is. LaGuardia. Well, it's now performing arts and music and art. It's sort of like that old film, and maybe, which I'm sure has been revived since, Fame.
Fame, yeah. It was the Fame School.
So that's where I went, and I got in because I could draw sort of good. And although there are many people who drew much better than me, much better artists, and they all became dentists. And I don't know, I worked out with my sort of style. And then I went to Syracuse University where, '62 to '66. But I did some things in the '60s I can't remember. And then I went to graduate school to avoid the Vietnam War. And then when I avoided it, at age 30, I decided that, oh, yes, I remember now, I want to be a cartoonist. So I devoted myself to that. And a couple of thousand cartoons later, I succeeded.
You know, you're almost there. Just keep trying.
I'm almost there. Like I said, I'm in eighth place, really. And also, when I look back on my cartoons, it's like, I really did some pretty good cartoons. I don't do many cartoons anymore. I'm just resting on my laurels. Which is, I have every right to do. I'm 75. The laurels are very comfortable. They're like a huge Barca lounger that I can just rest on. But now, as I said, I'm doing this book, Have I Got a Cartoon for You, which is, I mean, a great book of Jewish cartoons, but not just by Jewish cartoonists, which if I didn't let them in this book, a lot of these cartoons that these lovely Goyim did would be called hate crimes. But since they're all my friends, they're love crimes.
But they're funny, and most of them have a certain sweetness to them. How did you decide what to include? Because it seems to me there must be a lot of Jewish cartoons. Maybe I'm wrong on that.
Well, actually, there were, not in the New Yorker. And the early ones in New York from the 20s or 30s have a sort of anti-Semitic tone to them.
Oh, great.
because it's New York, and the New Yorker starts in 1925. Now, they're what I call a kind of benign anti-Semitism for that time. Which is a weird word, right?
Yeah.
But it's that when you look at New York in the 20s, it shifted from in 1880 having 80,000 Jews to having 1 million Jews, right. And not everybody's happy about that.
No.
Well, look, not even all the Jews were happy about it. The German Jews wanted, the Eastern European Jews somewhere else, right?
Well, that's the hallmark part of what Jewish humor is. We're the tribe that makes most fun of itself. Yeah, we make jokes about the Goyim, and I'm just using that word in a funny way, but they're not. Those aren't our main jokes, right?
No.
Our main jokes are about ourselves and self-reflections and the contradictions and... You know, it's the same, like, it's hard to be a Jew, right? But it's easier if you're funny.
Way easier, you know.
Way easier and necessary. And I think that is, you know, one of the things that, you know, when we look back on the cartoons that I picked for this book is, you know, you take a cartoon like this by Tom Toro, who isn't Jewish. And it shows the nativity scene, but the Magi giving the gifts to the Christ child. And the Jewish couple are looking at it, and the kid with the yarmulke is looking on sort of enviously, right? Because Christ is getting all these great gifts. and the father is saying to the kid, and he's holding it out, saying, "We got you a dreidel." So, a little bit like, and of course, in growing up in the 50s, you know, you felt like, I mean, honestly, don't want to insult any people on Too Jewish, but really, Hanukkah, it's like, that's a miracle.
it's like the Jon Stewart routine
sort of like
with Stephen Colbert,
thing, you know,
right?
Okay, the oil lasts a little bit longer than expected. It's like, it's like that's something like, well, maybe there's another explanation for that, or maybe we should, you know, use it in the Democrats' Green New Deal.
You know, of course, things have changed in so much of Jewish culture. You know, Hanukkah has now become this orgy of presents, too.
Right.
It's come to imitate Christian culture. Well, Christian, just kind of general American culture.
Yeah.
So, you know, will that cause some of the humor to just go away?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the humor like that, I want to, in the introduction to the book, introduction or foreword, Raj Kass wrote either the introduction or foreword. I wrote it. I can't remember. I'm always a little confused what a foreword or introduction is. They're both at the beginning.
Yeah, I don't know. Why do you need both? I never figured that.
Yeah, they're both at the beginning. Why? Because we wanted two names on the front of the book.
Yeah.
Mine and we want Raj. And look, if we keep talking, maybe I can get your name on the book, too.
God willing, as we say.
God willing, right. looked at the jokes that in Freud's book, Jokes in the Relation to the Unconscious, which are about matchmakers, are great jokes. But we don't make those jokes anymore.
No, right? That's right.
We don't make those jokes anymore. But as I said in the book, they're still great jokes, although they're probably somewhere someone will be offended by them. Actually, lots of people would be offended by them. Oh, yeah, it's in the book. So it's one of the cartoons, David Cyprus, perfect for your show, and it shows the wife is looking at the guy who's dressed in Hasidic garb at the haberdasher's store in front of Suits, and she's looking at him, and she's saying, "Too Jewish?" But you know, that's the name of your show.
Yes.
Tell me a little about the name of your show and why it's called Too Jewish, which is, in a way, accepting the contradictions of American Jewish life,
right, when I grew up, right? Look, we started the show almost by accident. It's almost 18 years ago. That sounds very Jewish too. But somebody said, "Oh, you know, you're doing ads, and you know, you could do a radio show, and it would be just great." So I said, "Okay, sure." And then he called me up a couple weeks later. Said, "You're starting August 1st," and I said, "I'm starting what?"
He says, "You have an hour on Sunday mornings, and you're doing a show."
So we had to come up with a name quickly, and we were trying to figure out a name, and I thought we would call it Deli Home Companion,
but I thought we would get sued,
and then we thought maybe All Jews Considered, and we thought we'd get sued for that too, and then we were calling it Shema Yisrael for a while, like Hero Israel. That seemed like
a good name.
And then people kept saying, it's a great name. They said, "That's really a great name, but it's
too Jewish."
Perfect.
That's for the name.
Yeah, all of those other ones were good. I mean, it's interesting when I ask for these cartoons, especially from the, you know, it's mainly by Jewish cartoonists who sent it in. Often the subject line are, "Here are my Jew tunes." Okay. Mm. So, which would be, you know, offensive, I guess, in some way, if it was that. But it's the recognition that it still means something to be Jewish. You know, even though I'm, let's say, a completely secular Jew in any way, I used to be an atheist, and I got tired of that. I don't know why. I mean, I just sort of got tired of the stridency of atheism more. Somehow, you know, all of, you know, Dawkins or Hitchens or all these people feeling, you know, all worked up, almost in an, you know, like a religious fervor, but an anti-religious fervor. So that became everything. And it was this, I don't know, it seemed sort of dumb in a way. It was like looking at religion or the ideas behind religion or the stories behind them as though they were some sort of false scientific theory. You know, like a bad, but that can't be true. I mean, God couldn't have made all those Beatles. And, you know, we're trying to figure out, like, you know, how did he do it, whatever. So, but still, I'm not a believer, and I don't do any of the rituals. And I think that's part of me also growing up in the 50s, where I did in Queens, and actually, frankly, not wanting to be Jewish.
Right.
You know, just not wanting to be Jewish. I was a Yankee fan, and it was American culture, and my parents were both born in this country, but you know, in 1908 or whatever. And also they were sort of proudly Jewish, but at the same time, they didn't want you to be too Jewish, because they knew in terms of getting ahead in American society, certainly at that time, that wasn't going to be good, right?
Right.
And so whole bunch of, you know, whole cohorts of girls I grew up with got their nose fixed, right?
Sure,
so, I mean,
sure,
all
of course.
There's always this.
Well,
conflict.
You know, the name changing and the nose fixing and all the rest of it. People think Sheldon and Irving are Jewish names, but they were just attempts to sound English. It just took too many of them.
Yeah, well, and also you knew if someone had two first names, they were usually in entertainment and they were Jewish.
Right, right.
because they left off the Goldberg.
Like Larry David.
Right, exactly.
Lenny Bruce.
Well, John Stewart,
John Stewart.
Up to today.
That was interesting. That always, the two first names were always sort of a giveaway.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, I was thinking of there's one cartoon in the book. The woman is saying to the man, "This will never work, David. Your family is significantly less non-observant than mine."
I know. Yeah, and that's by Robert Layton, who is Jewish, and he's one of the cartoonists. A number of years ago, I brought into the New Yorker. And I said, Robert Layton, I don't know, you sort of seem Jewish. Layton doesn't sound, of course, and it was one of the name things.
Yeah.
But that's the exactly kind of self-reflective, contradictory kind of humor that I think has its origins somewhat in rabbinic teaching, going way back. I write a little bit about Pilpul, this logic chopping, this turning things around on itself. I think that is sort of a prominent characteristic of a certain kind of Jewish humor. Of course, Jewish humor and Jews, there's all kinds of jokes. But interestingly, most of the jokes that we think of as classic Jewish jokes, for example, don't really revolve around the things that other jokes revolve around, which is lots of aggression or sex or profanity.
No, and look, there's so many great. I don't want to give away too many of the cartoons. I love yours. The guy on the psychiatrist's couch, and the psychiatrist says, "Any other hobbies besides suffering?"
Yeah. So I did coach jokes like that. And that's particularly Jewish, I'm thinking of a cartoon that I did for the New Yorker where the wife is saying to the husband, "But why aren't you grateful for all the diseases you don't have?" There are really lots of great cartoons in the book. Two Jewish listeners, and it's well worth buying.
Absolutely.
Whatever the cost.
Everybody should rush out and get it.
Actually, I think it's pretty cheap.
It is inexpensive, especially considering what books can cost today. Have I Got a Cartoon for You, the Moment Magazine of Jewish Cartoons, edited with an introduction by Bob Mankoff and a foreword by Roz Jazz. Bob, thank you so much. Where can people go to find out more about you and your work?
Well, one thing they can go to find out that all these cartoons, should they want them on prints or licensing or whatever, is cartooncollections.com, which is my new business, which has all of these cartoons. And let's say you want to use one of these cartoons on your show or blog or whatever, you can license it for a very, very low price, or you can get a print. So cartooncollections.com is where all of the cartoons. And where can they find out about me? I guess they can use this thing they call the internet.
Yes, it's pretty effective.
Just Google me.
Someday it may amount to something, this internet.
Yeah, someday, yeah. It's either going to help save the world or destroy it.
Yeah, or both. Maybe both.
Or both. Hey, it's been great talking to you.
My pleasure, Bob. A happy new year, whether you celebrate it or not.
And thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be the distinguished academic anthropologist Augustin Fuentes on why we believe and his new book on that subject. Our playout this morning comes for the coming Jewish High Holy Day season. Just a week from tonight, Rosh Hashanah begins. Here's a different Areshet Sfateinu, really fun from the shofar service on Rosh Hashanah. Join us for the High Holy Days at my own congregation, Congregation Beit Simcha, if you are in Tucson or anywhere in southern Arizona. Rosh Hashanah arrives September 29th and 30th. Call 520-276-5675 to make reservations. No payment is required, although totally voluntary donations are accepted. That is, it's free, but you must pre-register. Call 520-276-5675 to attend the Jewish High Holy Days at Congregation Beit Simcha with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. My friends, on this last week of 5779, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.